Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on December 14, 2017. This talk is the second of a series of talks on the Anapanasati Sutta. The Anapanasati Sutta is a discourse from the Buddha on the proper use of mindfulness during Shamatha Vipassana meditation. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
I think Lisa's the only one that doesn't know. Maura, you're aware of where we are right now with the Anapanasati Sutta. So I'm giving a series of talks on a sutta called the Anapanasati Sutta, which means breath mindfulness, literally. And I'm also introducing a slightly enhanced meditation instruction, and I've been waiting quite a while because I wanted to have the proper context to teach the new instructions.
For the and advanced.
It's not really advanced, but I don't teach anything that's not not in the context. Mm-hmm. So over the summer, we went through a series of seven classes on the four foundations of mindfulness, which is an aspect or a foundation for this sutta. The Anapanasati Sutta is almost never taught in its entirety. The word is used to justify a lot of different breath meditations. And there's sections of this sutta that are taken out of context and presented as the Buddha's teaching on how to meditate, rather than when you listen to the whole sutta. The Buddha is simply describing the experiences of senior monks, who he gives credit to, for remaining mindful of the breath no matter what impermanent state was arising during their meditation. So taking it out of context, the overemphasis is on these impermanent states and trying to make them permanent, and using them for contemplation, which only furthers distraction. And that really is, it's the misunderstanding, misinterpretation, and misapplication of the Anapanasati Sutta, really just relying on the word itself, that has led to a lot of so-called Buddhist meditation that is mindfulness of certain types of breath and then mindfulness of certain subjects, and saying that the Buddha taught to do that in this sutta, and it's just simply wrong when you understand it in context. So what I want to do is read a small section of this just to put in context the new instructions, then we'll meditate for 20 minutes. This is what I did on Tuesday night. And this series of talks is ongoing. In other words, I taught a section Tuesday. I'm teaching another section today. I'll teach another section on Saturday and probably two more classes next week, rather than what I usually do, which is if I'm teaching a sutta, I keep it to one class. But I want to introduce the new meditation instructions to each class, and this sutta lays the context. So if you're interested in in all the talks, they're online. But I encourage everyone to at least read the whole sutta. So just to lay the foundation, I heard someone coming up, for the new instructions. And again, remember that this sutta is a Buddha's description of how senior monks. Let me lay that foundation anyway. The Buddha heard of a good handful of senior monks that were teaching very effectively in the Sangha, and he heard of that, and he came to that particular monastery during the rainy season. And gave great praise to these senior monks that they had understood and developed the heart root of the Dhamma, which means they have developed the Eightfold Path, and now were able to teach in a useful and practical way. And one of the important lines to me, or at least what got my attention, he says, even during the Buddhist time, he says, this type of Dhamma practice is rare in the world. People that are that focused on just what the Buddha taught, even during the Buddha's time, and even within his own Sangha, he's making a point of that. And then he talks about you should give praise to these monks, and people should travel great distances to hear what they have to say. So that's the theme of this Sangha. And then he gets into the description of how they've developed the Dhamma and relates it directly to the foundation, or the four foundations of mindfulness established in Shamatha Vipassana meditation. So that being said, I'm just going to read a small section, then we'll meditate, and then I'll get into the sutta more deeper. the Buddha's words. Now, how is mindfulness of in and out breathing appropriately developed so as to be of great benefit? The implication in that one line is there's an appropriate way to develop mindfulness of the in-breath and the out-breath, and there's an infinite number of inappropriate ways. And he's getting right to the point. A monk, having gone to the wilderness, to the shade of a tree, or to an empty building, sits down folding his legs crosswise, holding his body erect, and, an important line, setting mindfulness to the fore. That one line sets the tone and direction of this entire sutta that is often overlooked. Setting mindfulness to the fore, as it, and just previously to that, he referenced being mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath. Being mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath, now we set mindfulness to the fore, meaning that is what we're putting our focus on, nothing else. They have set mindfulness to the fore. The Buddha continues, always mindful of the breath they breathe in. Always mindful of the breath they breathe out. Simple instructions on how to meditate, isn't it? And he's laying the foundation for everything that follows. When breathing in long, they notice I am breathing in long. There's no direction here to manufacture a long breath. He's just simply saying when you find that you're breathing in long, you notice it. You breathe in long. When breathing out long, they notice I am breathing out long. And that, there's so many so-called meditation instructions on manipulating the breath in different ways, beginning with exaggerated long breath and exaggerated slow breath and exaggerated shallow breath. Breathe into this part of the body. Breathe into that part of the body. There's no instruction here in any of that. If that's what you want to do, that's fine, but it's not what the Buddha taught. Or when breathing in short, they notice I am breathing in short. Or when breathing out short, they notice I am breathing out short. They train themselves. I'm making this gender neutral. Where he's directing this towards the male gender. He trains himself. They train themselves. I will breathe in sensitive to the entire body. Meaning now you're uniting the body and the mind, which is something that was uncommon in most spiritual disciplines during the Buddha's time and encouraged in most Buddhist practice today. It's not about the Buddha's whole point is to bring the mind and the body to what's occurring right now. And you cannot do that when you objectify the mind on other subjects, on other objects outside of the body. Uniting the mind and the body. And that's what he means. Sensitive means, it doesn't mean to put an exaggerated focus on the body. It simply means to be sensitive that you're in your body. This is what's occurring, your breath in the body. And the four foundations of mindfulness, it begins with being mindful of the breath in the body. That's the first foundation of mindfulness. So again, you have to understand the context. He trains himself. They train themselves. I will breathe out, sensitive to the entire body. So he's taking the initial instruction to be mindful of the breath in the body and the in-breath and the out-breath to ground you in your body where your whole life is occurring and simply be sensitive to that feeling. Again, laying the foundation for the importance of this. I get into quite a bit of context here in the article that I'm not going to read tonight. And that's as far as I want to go, I think. Let me take it one a little bit further. And I touched on this Tuesday night. The Buddha continues. He trains himself. I will breathe in, calming bodily fabrications. He trains himself. I will breathe out, calming bodily fabrications. One of the great misunderstandings and misapplications is the Buddha is thinking that the Buddha is saying that I'm going to breathe in and my intention while I'm breathing in is to calm bodily fabrications. You're missing a comma. The Buddha is teaching that simply by the act of breathing in and being mindful of the breath in the body, bodily fabrications calm. And when we breathe out, being mindful of the out-breath, bodily fabrications calm. And that leads directly to what will follow and what we'll get to tonight. So there's five folks that have joined us online. Welcome. I think I know who three of them are. David and Mary and Lorna said she was going to join us tonight. We welcome you all. I still haven't found a way where you can interact directly with me, but if you do have any questions, you could send me an email and I'll certainly get back to you. If you have any questions as I'm going, please ask the questions, but Comments and discussions, let's hold that off until I'm done reading to get this in the context. But anything that's confusing, please let me know. And this is about where I left off on Tuesday. Again, you can pick up online. I just mentioned being mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath and how that calms bodily fabrications. And it's important to notice the calming. And that's even part of mindfulness. My words here. It is by following the instructions for breath mindfulness during shamatha vipassana meditation that mindfulness of the breath allows for any fabrications, bodily, verbal fabrications, or mental fabrications that arise to calm and not be further distraction. Again, remember, the Buddha's teaching this as a explanation and an example of senior monks in their meditation practice and what arises, and to use the breath to not be distracted by other things. There's other suttas where the Buddha describes those different types of fabrications. And remember, fabrications are any type of fabrication is dependent on that initial ignorance. Remember, dependent origination. Ignorance gives rise to mental fabrications. Mental fabrications are the easiest description, are assumptions, wrong assumptions we've made about ourselves in relation to this impermanent world. But once those are made, rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, most people spend the rest of their lives rooted in that ignorance and defending anything that would challenge that ignorance, including using a meditation method to further distraction by using it to analyze and contemplate rather than just deepen concentration. The following in the sutta continues in this manner. There is no significance to the actual thought, feeling, or assumptive fabrication arising individually, as shamatha vipassana meditation is practiced for deepening concentration. The Buddha is emphasizing the singular importance to return mindfulness to the sensation of breathing in the body, no matter what impermanent quality is arising. Again, if you think about that, and there's other suttas that I've cited at the end of this article, including the Samadhi Sutta and the Buddha's description of jhanas, the Buddha's teachings on the importance of developing tranquility and insight, shamatha vipassana, together as part of a meditation practice, where the Buddha references all these other things. So again, it's so important to understand the context of the Buddha's teachings if you're going to understand any singular sutta. One of the ways that I describe this is that there's a few very core, just to use the word in this context, superior teachings, superior suttas, such as the teachings on dependent origination, Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, and then the slightly inferior, but not to imply that they're not important, only that you need to have the context of the superior suttas, such as the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and the Anapanasati Sutta. If you're lacking the context of what the Buddha taught and why he taught, then you'll end up misapplying, which is exactly what happened, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness and breath meditation. As shamatha vipassana meditation is practiced for deepening concentration, I know I'm repeating myself, but just to make the point, the Buddha is emphasizing the singular importance to return mindfulness to the sensation of breathing in the body, no matter what impermanent quality is arising. So I read that twice for emphasis. Now notice as he's describing the different occurrences and fabrications that arise, he's always saying to return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Let me get a little further in this. This is further reinforced near the conclusion of this section through the instruction. He trains himself, I will breathe in, focusing on inconstancy. I will breathe out, focusing on inconstancy or impermanence. That line is pointing to to remember that the things that would otherwise be distracting are all impermanent. And so in that way, as we deepen our concentration and apply meditation properly, we're using meditation, quieting the mind, shamatha, to gain insight, the only type of insight that the Buddha was interested in, into impermanence. And he uses that reference to inconstancy. Doesn't mean you can't hold your water. Impermanence. To explain that these things that are arising that other people become obsessed with are all impermanent phenomena. Why chase after them? There's no other significance except to understand that they're impermanent. So that then, recognizing the impermanence of all things gives rise to dispassion and then to cessation. And the Buddha talks about that. I'm pre-qualifying what I'm going to read, just to, again, keep it in context. And finally, to the mindful awareness, that relinquishment of clinging to all self-referential views, rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, has been developed. Meaning we'll have the actual understanding that we figured it out. We've awakened. And that's another reference to the heartwood of the Dhamma. He's holding these senior monks out as developing the heartwood of the Dhamma, and he's explaining them how they use proper applications of breath mindfulness meditation to achieve that development. The Buddha closes this instruction with the instruction to remain mindful of the breath in the body while gently holding in mind the qualities developed through meditation and when practiced with a proper framework of dispassion arising as a quality of mind. Later on in the sutta, the Buddha describes the seven factors of awakening, which he also refers to in the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, as the concentration developed in meditation, supporting the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, then gives rise to these seven factors of awakening that you need to develop if you're going to awaken. And they're common aspects of the quality of an awakened mind, meaning that they're not something that's not achievable by ordinary human beings. The Buddha consistently said, if you could not do this, if you could not develop this, I wouldn't teach it. And also in the Satipatthana Sutta and in this sutta, towards the end of the sutta, he references using the concentration and mindfulness developed through the four foundations of mindfulness and breath mindfulness meditation to develop, and he speaks directly to this, integrating and understanding Four Noble Truths, the whole point of his Dhamma. And getting back to what I said before about understanding the superior and the inferior suttas, if you have dismissed or haven't developed an understanding of what the Buddha awakened to, dependent origination, and the proper understanding of that, and that everything else that he taught was in the context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, then there's no way of understanding these other suttas. You just get sidetracked with other conceptual applications of mindfulness and breath awareness. The Buddha closes the section with instruction to remain mindful of the breath in the body while gently holding in mind the qualities developed through meditation when practiced within the proper framework of dispassion arising as a quality of mind. Dispassion is a quality of non-self-reference that supports the cessation of craving for establishment of a self rooted in wrong view and clinging to those views. Dispassion is one of the qualities of awakening, one of the seven factors of awakening. Through dispassion, clinging comes to cessation. Finally, relinquishing or abandoning all views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths occurs. So again, the Buddha is encouraging and emphasizing the importance of proper breath mindfulness meditation, shamatha vipassana meditation, to develop these other qualities. And then as these qualities develop, to be mindful that they're actually developing. And do you see the reason why? Because that's how a useful application of mindfulness is applied to the Dhamma. It keeps us focused. So the Buddha doesn't care if we can become mindful of concepts or mindful of washing the dishes. Those things are fine. But being mindful of kitchen chores is not going to develop the Eightfold Path, is it? In fact, if we forget about the foolishness of using mindfulness to be mindful of washing the dishes or anything else that we might do, and apply that mindfulness to the Eightfold Path, then we will be mindful when we're washing the dishes or cleaning the cat or driving to work or all the other things. That's a natural outcome of developing the Dhamma. But when we substitute an impermanent outcome and objectify the Dhamma practice, we lose it entirely. And again, that's what the Buddha's teaching in this. And again, he's using these senior monks that he's giving this talk to the larger Sangha, who are learning from the senior monks. And he's praising them in their understanding of even how to teach, because they're teaching the same thing to the rest of the Sangha, just this way. In this manner, it can be seen clearly that the Anapanasati Sutta is consistent with the Satipatthana Sutta and consistent with becoming empty of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. The Buddha continues. I'm going to go back to the male gender because that's just what that's how it was translated. He trains himself. I will breathe in sensitive to rapture. Rapture is a somewhat antiquated word. Most people don't really even know what it means. They usually apply it to the biblical story of the rapture. In this sense, the rapture is a gentle but intense focus rooted in the joy of understanding that we found something that will deliver awakening. It's a joyful focus on what's occurring. He trains himself, I will breathe in, sensitive to rapture. One of the exalted mind states is rapture or joyful engagement in the Dhamma, and the Buddha is referring to that here. He trains himself, I will breathe out, sensitive to rapture. He trains himself, I will breathe in, sensitive to pleasure. So we're not trying to breathe in pleasure. That would be foolish, wouldn't it? In fact, it would be antithetical. It would go against what the Buddha is teaching. Just simply noticing, be sensitive that there's pleasure in this. Not to be distracted by it. Because if we're overemphasizing, in fact, I got an interesting email from a student today. I won't mention her name. If we think that meditation is to find something pleasurable and pleasurable experiences, we'll overemphasize it, won't we? But if we notice that the simple act of deepening concentration is pleasurable and come back to the sensation of breathing, if we're simply sensitive that it's arising, it won't be a distraction. We won't make it a prerequisite for my meditation practice, meaning I hope this meditation is pleasurable in some way. He trains himself, I will breathe out, sensitive to pleasure. He trains himself, I will breathe in, sensitive to mental fabrications. Meaning, noticing that a fabrication has arisen, and I'm just sensitive to it. I notice it. That's all it means. Remember, in the context of bringing mindfulness to the fore and focused on the breath, what do we do when we are sensitive that a mental fabrication has arisen? Come back to the sensation of breathing. The Buddha doesn't give any instructions to, when you see a mental fabrication arise, figure it out, where'd it come from, what's it established in, where does it go, where does it take you, what does it mean, who gave it to you? Just be sensitive to it. If those other things were important, you would think that an awakened human being would say, get into it or manufacture it. Manufacture the feeling of pleasure and then figure it out. Do some more eye-making with it.
Well, you talked all about that in the Aro Sutra and all that stuff, you know. That's it. You just went into... Yeah, I know we're not supposed to be commenting, but you would never go, and before you took it out, say, who did it and who said it and did it.
I wouldn't. Most people that actually follow the Buddhist teachings wouldn't, but it's a common occurrence. And that's, again, the Buddhist teaching it because he's noticed that it arises in other people. He wouldn't. It's a singularly important teaching, not something that the Buddha doesn't need to teach, or he wouldn't bring it up. He trains himself, I will breathe out calming mental fabrication. He trains himself, I will breathe out calming mental fabrication. By breathing in and breathing out, mental fabrications naturally calm, unless we do something with it. He trains himself, I will breathe in, sensitive to the mind. He trains himself, I will breathe out, sensitive to the mind. He's referring to the ongoing distraction that conditioned thinking can cause, but in meditation we simply recognize that the mind is processing thoughts. It's what it's supposed to do. It's its function. Come back to the sensation of breathing. I'm sensitive to the fact that I'm thinking. But it doesn't have to be a distraction if I'm using meditation in its proper application to deepen concentration. He trains himself, I will breathe in, calming the mind. As an aspect of breathing in, my mind calms. We all know that. He trains himself, I will breathe out, calming the mind. He trains himself, I will breathe in, steadying the mind. Concentration. He trains himself, I will breathe out, steadying the mind. He trains himself, I will breathe in, releasing the mind. What an interesting line there, isn't it? Of course, it's a translation from the Pali. What the Buddha is referring to is beginning to abandon clinging one thought to the next thought. I'm releasing the mind. I'm no longer attached to my thoughts. What I am doing is developing a mindful awareness of the breath in the body. And in so doing, I'm interrupting a conditioned mind that seeks to establish itself in every thought that occurs, meaning following one thought, with another self-establishing thought. That's a description of monkey mind, which everybody has at one time or another said, I have it. That's what a monkey mind is, an unreleased mind. It's a clinging mind.
An unawakened
mind. An unawakened mind, yes.
A mind filled with dukkha and ignorance.
Yep.
And thinking things are permanent and unchanging.
Yeah.
And that we know that.
Well, and again, that's pointing to the useful insight into the three marks of existence.
Right.
Because when you do that, you realize that what you up until that point have been trying to establish as permanent, and the Buddha gets into all those, the five clinging aggregates, etc., in this sutta too. What you've been trying to establish as permanent can't be, just can't be done. But because of ignorance, we continue to do it. He trains himself, I will breathe in, focusing on impermanence. He trains himself, I will breathe out, focusing on impermanence. I mean, remember, mindfulness to the four. It doesn't mean I'm trying to create some feeling of impermanence. I'm mindful and focusing on the impermanence of what's arising and passing away during meditation. He trains himself, I will breathe in, focusing on dispassion. He trains himself, I will breathe out, focusing on dispassion. Meaning, as a consequence of developing this, in the Eightfold Path, it refers to meditation as right meditation. As a consequence of developing right meditation, I will notice dispassion arise. It's not something that we manufacture. It's a consequence of a well-focused Dhamma practice. He trains himself, I will breathe in, focusing on cessation. Meaning being mindful of cessation. Cessation of what? Clinging to ignorant views. He trains himself, I will breathe out, focusing on cessation. He trains himself, I will breathe in, focusing on relinquishment, which is the final abandoning of all views rooted in ignorance. And these three lines here could be wildly misinterpreted, and they usually are, when you're lacking the context of the Buddha's purpose and the framework of the Eightfold Path. When the Buddha described an awakened human being from the point of view of right view, he describes that person's view as having a profound understanding, a penetrating understanding of dukkha, and that the quality of that mind as calm and released from clinging to wrong views. But if you're lacking that context, you can misunderstand what does relinquishing mean. We could get into all the things that I have to relinquish now. It's just one thing, and this helps keep the Dhamma focused. The one thing that we have to learn to identify is dukkha and how it manifests, so that we can recognize that process and relinquish the process. What is the process? The process is rooted in ignorant thinking, ignorant of Four Noble Truths. It all comes back and it's all seen in that context. He trains himself, I will breathe out, focusing on relinquishment. And again, just to make the point, to be mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath, to be mindful of the arising, the in-breath, and the passing away, the out-breath, is direct and profound training on understanding impermanence. My own breath is impermanent. That which gives me physical life is itself impermanent. I got an email from another student. I think he might be joining us tonight. And the email was, the whole Dhamma is contained in the next breath. And when you look at it that way, not to get too zen about it, but when you understand the overall context, it is in the next breath, meaning if that breath is well concentrated and framed by the Eightfold Path, the entire Dhamma is right here, right now.
And conditioned by awakening, letting go of, right? So the next breath, if we handled the previous breath appropriately,
mm-hmm.
and cultivated awareness and an allowance for mental states to just arise and pass, and recognizing the ignorance that comes from clinging them
yes.
together, then the Dhamma is in the next breath.
Yes, and
that breath is conditioned, is more likely to be awakened, and the karma is extinguishing, and then we just experience the rolling through of past karmas, and we handle them.
Yes, that was, and I was, if you didn't bring up karma, I was going to, because that's exactly how it relates to. And when we are well concentrated and have developed a refined mindfulness that holds in mind the Eightfold Path, then each moment, and you've heard me say this often, then each moment has the potential to continue to move towards awakening, to cease the effects of karma. I guess I said, karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional, and I should say mindless acts, moderated by the present level of our mindfulness, what we're holding in mind. And if we're holding in mind the framework of the Eightfold Path, which requires right meditation, which requires concentration, then in this moment, I'm awakening. If not, then the potential of this moment is rooted in ignorance, and one can only become further ignorant. It's the meaning of becoming as it relates to dependent origination, to my book, to everything. What are we going to become? And the entire... I was talking a little bit about this Tuesday night, and one of these days I want to expand on it. But when you take any one of the Buddha's teachings, and the Buddha often taught, or at least it's preserved in a series, meaning Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, the Five Hindrances, etc., etc., Seven Factors of Awakening, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. When you take any of those overarching conceptual context, you can see that within all of those is the entire Dhamma. So the first noble truth, the Buddha stated that dukkha occurs. When you understand the why and the how and the continuation of dukkha, and you bring it to cessation, you understand everything the Buddha ever taught by understanding dukkha. But the same thing can be said about the second noble truth when you understand craving and clinging. The reason why the Buddha's teachings can really be called the Dhamma is because in everything that he taught, when it's seen in its proper context, is an essential truth. So when you understand the Anapanasati Sutta in the proper context, it is a complete teaching. The same can be said as the Satipatthana Sutta. The same could be said for the Buddha's very first teaching, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Except he gave another 84,000, big number, nobody knows the different teachings, all situational and in that context of Four Noble Truths.
Almost every sutta that we have discussed in here, that's been presented in here, we always comes back to saying it contains a whole Dhamma.
It does.
It contains a whole Dhamma.
And that's a difficulty when you take one or two or five suttas, you don't have the right context, and you say, well, this is the Buddha's teaching. And that's true about anything we learn, isn't it? You know, if you want to learn, use something mundane, I usually, if you want to learn how to change the oil in your car, and that's taught over five classes, but you only go to one, you're probably going to make a mess of your car. If you want to learn what the Buddha taught, you have to actually develop what the Buddha taught. You have to be focused on it. That's what he's talking about here, too. Again, holding the monks up as an example, these senior monks that are so capable of teaching others, because his words, the Buddha's words, they have developed the heartwood. Another way of saying that, before they did go out and teach, they did develop the heartwood, which means they're not out there confusing people as to what the Buddha taught. One more statement by the Buddha, then I'm going to stop for tonight. The Buddha continues this section saying, this is how mindfulness of in and out breathing is developed and pursued so as to be of great benefit. Think about all the things that the Buddha could be teaching. It's mindfulness of the in and out breath that is of great benefit. And he's really not teaching anything else here, is he? He's teaching to use your meditation practice properly by being mindful of the in-breath and the out-breath. As we get further into the sutta, and I know we're all busy people, but I encourage you to to listen to the talks and read the whole sutta, because it does put it all into context. But I think that's enough. On Saturday, we're going to get into the Buddha's reference to the four foundations of mindfulness in relation to the breath. So that's enough for tonight on this, though, I think. Thank you. It's a small class. Let's just go around the room. And if you have any questions, you could ask then. And I also like to hear what you think of the new instructions in meditation, if you find them helpful in developing an understanding of impermanence and keeping your meditation focused. Maura, it's good to see you tonight.
Good to be here. How many questions? What was I supposed to say? The meditation instructions. I remember when I was listening, it seemed effective, but I can't remember now.
Okay.
Yeah, I do remember the differences that the additions, but what was there was a word or two that I personally I thought were, in terms of just practicing what I believe to be mindfulness of breathing, the way that the Buddha taught it, what I believe to be, the way that you described it, the way that I believe it to be, have been taught, whatever words you added in there were coherent with the way that it seems to unfold if you follow those directions appropriately.
Thank you. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm making that clear.
No, you are, and that's really the point of the instructions, is that they relate. And I was thinking for at least 2 years to change the instructions, but as a Sangha, we didn't have the context yet. You'll see that they relate directly to what the Buddha's teaching in both in the Satipatthana Sutta and the Anapanasati Sutta.
Yeah, I definitely like them better than the old ones. But not liked. I thought they were more on, I think they're more on point to exactly what it was pointing to. So I greatly appreciate that, and thank you.
Yes, thank you. You know, like I said, I've been wanting to, especially to in relation to, we went through the four foundations of mindfulness over the summer. And I was about to introduce them then, I realized, wait a minute, I better explain the Anapanasati Sutta first and use that. And it's remarkable that as a Sangha, how far we've really developed a broad understanding of the Buddha's teachings.
Including the teacher.
Yeah. And that we can have a meditation instruction like this that just about everyone has said that they find it helpful. We'll get to Kevin next and see what he's got to say. Kevin, it's good to see you tonight. And it's okay to say you don't like him.
Do you want to be part of the in-group or the out-group?
I definitely like it.
I know you would.
I think it's something that's been inherent in all the teachings that we've heard and what I've read, and it really helps to deepen it a little bit more. It really helps to show that it is mindfulness. It's in, you know, the concentration steps, the effort, the mindfulness, and the breathing are all one. And it really helps keep that together. And then in context with this sutta, it's great. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, good.
It's something that, I think it's something, a way to deepen our understanding of shamatha and vipassana, you know. So,
yeah.
And this teaching is, you know, I read through it today. It's like, really, like everything, but it's like a primer for how to awaken.
Yeah.
And if we could hold it in mind, if I could, you know, as I'm reading, I'm thinking, okay, I have to remember this, you know, and this is so exciting, and this is really great, and then, you know, life starts to happen, and then you start, you know, even my mind will start to wander as I'm reading. But if you could, it would be so great to be like the monks and be able to just live it and boom, you know, one day.
Yeah, maybe. But a lot of householders awakened during the Buddha's time, too.
Yeah.
And that was very important. You know, if it wasn't for some of those folks, specifically like Anathapindika, the Buddha never would have survived, and those teachings would have been long gone. You know, and
yeah,
other people.
Just the monks.
The sutta, it really is remarkable in that way. And you still need to have an understanding of the other superior suttas to really apply it. This sutta, and the Satipatthana Sutta are going to be part of the next book. But included in that book is going to be the reference and the explanation of the superior suttas. But if you understand the overarching teachings, the Anapanasati Sutta takes you home. More, you had to...
No, I was going to say, what you said, Kevin, about, okay, so hold in mind, and you're reading it, and then your mind wanders off. But it's the same thing, like the fact that you recognize that your mind wanders off, you know, the awareness is strengthening, you know, non-clinging, awakened awareness is strengthening in order to recognize that and return to what it was doing. I remember before I knew the Dhamma, I would be listening. You listen to a song, you're a kid, and I would be trying to remember, like, listen to the lyrics, and then I'm like, how was I trying to listen to the lyrics, and I stopped listening to them, and I listened to it again, and and I didn't know what was happening. I'm like, why can't I just listen to the lyrics all the way through to the song? You know, but. So having a context in which to see that and recognize and return it, instead of just like, what was that all about? You know.
Yeah, the contact Lucy in the Sky with Glasses, I thought, for years. You have in anything, but it's certainly with something as important as a Dhamma, you need to have the context is like the container. It holds it in place, so you know where to look. And because of the nature of a mind rooted in ignorance is constantly looking for distraction. That's why we need that's why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path, for that specific reason. You know, we understood that. Lisa, good to see you tonight. We missed you.
I know. It's so good to be back, because being away, I had Duca flying all over the place.
Bad things happen.
I'm sitting here thinking, first of all, attention span is part of my issue and reading comprehension. So,
me too.
I don't know, the instructions, I got lost after the first couple, stick to your breath and I was good. So, but that's me. So, but I liked it because it didn't have a lot of extra.
Yeah.
It was very focused on the breathing in and the breathing out in that perspective, instead of giving me more context of what to do with the thoughts when they come in.
Yeah.
I like that it was just the focus, just the facts.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this is about.
Yeah, and what I found for me is the second I get away from just the daily meditative practice, and it doesn't matter how much of it is, but the further I got away, the more chaotic everything became. And I was listening when you said about mindfulness while you're doing the dishes. And, you know, in the first I heard that, I'm like, you can be mindful wherever you are. And then I started to think about it, and I was like, my last couple weeks were extremely chaotic, something I haven't experienced in a while. And I was having periods of mindfulness, but I wasn't meditating on a regular basis. And I wasn't taking the key time to put that in place as an anchor to my day. And no matter how much I was trying the mindfulness throughout the day, I was stumbling around in a lot of just a lot of dukkha. So this was just a very simple reminder for me of how critical, like, for my sanity, my own personal sanity, is to make sure that I find a cushion for at least 5 minutes. Like, seriously, I wasn't even giving it 5 minutes, and it really had a big impact. So I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad I was able to come back.
I am too on both of those. thank you, Lisa. It's, I hear that's, unfortunately, it's not unfortunate, it's just the way it is. I hear it so often that not being part of a sangha, you get away from it, and how, and just how easy it is to get too busy in your life to spend a few minutes meditating and then holding in mind the other factors. But we can always come back to it. You know? I mean, that's, and we are, I say it so often, but we are so fortunate what has developed here in Frenchtown. Because it, like the Buddha said in this sutta, even during the Buddha's time, he acknowledged that a well-focused sangha is something rare in the world. You should travel, in the words that he used, you should travel leagues with a lot of provision so you can get here and listen to this stuff because it's so important. And we don't have to. It's right here. It's remarkable. Okay. I'm going to continue. The first talk is online. This will be up tonight or tomorrow morning, Saturday. I got a feeling it's going to be 3 or 4 more classes before we'll have all of them. But please catch up as you can, and or just keep coming to the classes until we're done. And read the whole article because it puts it in context too. So. Any other questions or comments about?
Just a comment. I mean, you talked about the superior teachings and knowing them and having the context. But in this, it's hard for me to sort out what was the sutta and what was your teaching because it just came out so well. But it is woven in there. It's all. It seems like it's all part of that. So it's really, again, so central. It's just the nucleus of the Dharma.
It's remarkable. I used to say this more often. I think I got a little self-conscious about being so dramatic, but I look at the Four Noble Truths as this, sometimes I just have this picture in my head of this beautiful jewel encased little box, and you open up the box and everything's in there. Everything you need. And it's also an empty box because it's empty of ignorance. And that's what the Buddha taught. You know, he taught this incredibly pure and really simple truth that if we could just recognize and abandon our own ignorance, it's right in front of us. It's not something that, it's not mystical, it's not magical, it's not even miraculous, except maybe awakening is in that sense. It's just the truth. It's just plain and simple. It's right in front of us. And the one thing that I've learned a lot from teaching. I'm really the most fortunate human being in the world to have what's developed here developed in the way it did. You know, just being asked to teach a meditation class. But I think the most profound thing that I've learned from teaching classes and writing this stuff out has helped a lot is how powerful the need for a self-referential ego self to continue to ignore its own ignorance. And the incredibly intricate strategies that it will develop to continue to ignore its own ignorance. And that's what's so difficult. But again, that's what the Buddha awakened to. Upon his awakening, he sat off and on in meditation, considering, how am I going to teach this, knowing what he knew about the nature of ignorance? What can I do to pierce that common human problem, pierce that veil of ignorance? An Eightfold Path is what he taught to do just that.
You know, John, just in your saying that is, I always believe things happen exactly the way they're supposed to happen. So the amount of the trickiness of my mind in the last 3 weeks was astounding. Because I've been doing a lot of this work. So I'm usually pretty, can catch stuff a little bit before it gets to be too far off. And that's, again, why it's so important for me to continue the daily connection. Because what started was this insane spiral of conversation in my head. And I don't even know how it got, seriously, I don't know how I couldn't stop it, because I've not witnessed anything like that for probably 10 years.
Yeah.
But it was something that brought up some nuances of sneakiness. That's just all I can call it, is sneakiness of my ego, mine. It's like, let me try this one, see if I can pull her back in. And the purpose of me needing to have this regular meditation and the ongoing learning I'm sitting here and it's just so thrown up in my face. So just have to share that.
Thank you. That's the nature of conditioned mind, isn't it? That it's there, and listen until you finally let it go. The Buddha would often say the wise know the danger in even the slightest transgression, meaning just moving away just a little bit. But the focus that is needed isn't unachievable. It's not superhuman, but it does take it. The Eightfold Path talks about right effort. Right effort is a reminder that we need to meditate, and we need to develop the broader understanding of the Eightfold Path. Anybody can do it. But because it's simple and direct doesn't mean that it's easy in relation to a conditioned mind. And that's what I mean. It's astonishing to me the more I see it through the classes, but also just in the world now, being able to see dukkha a little bit more clearly and understand that the power of a mind rooted in ignorance to continue its own ignorance.
I was going to just say two things with all due respect, really, because you say, well, you can always come back, and that's not necessarily true, because, you know, we don't know if we can always come back. You could walk out the door.
Oh, you know, the Bahia Sutta.
I know, you could walk out the door, and that's the thing that we just, you know, talk about ignorance. We just don't recognize the importance. I include myself in that category, needless to say. So I include myself in that category. And dovetailing right on that, which I didn't plan to, was when you said, "Well, it's not miraculous, or it's not this, or anything." And that is true. It's not miraculous or anything, but. Everyone that's in this room, I know I've heard them allude to it. The even a moment of cessation, even a few moments of freedom in the mind from the incessant stories and reactive nature to that which is occurring. Just beholding that in awareness, it's not miraculous, but it's something that is unparalleled.
Yeah, unparalleled is a good word. It's the most precious thing, you know, it really is.
Precious kind of, sounds, but it is precious.
I think the most fortunate thing that for all of us, but for myself, is coming across the true teachings of an awakened human being, and that they're still here all this time later, because there's been continual assaults on it too. You know, it's even, there was a time even in the place of its birth in India, there was no Buddhism at all.
Look what's happened to the
Rohingyas. get off track with all that. It's just remarkable that those teachings are here. That we have minds that, not that we need anything special, but we have minds that can develop this and actually awaken. You know? Maybe I was a little bit too flippant that you can always come back to it. You can't always come back to it. You know, the Buddha, again, would often use a phrase, we should take to this like our hair's on fire, our head's on fire, because we don't know. And the Bahia Sutta, where Bahia begged with the Buddha, teach me the Dhamma, I don't know how much longer I have, and I don't know how much longer you have. You might die before you... And he begged him and begged him and begged him. Finally, the Buddha relented and gave him a pithy teaching. Bahia awakened, walked down the road a couple more miles and got trampled by a cow. But at least he awakened. We don't know.
Was that cow that escaped from the nativity? I heard there was a couple of them.
Uh-oh. Once more, it goes off. There's no rain in that.
I was thinking, what the hell are they got me in here for? I'm kidding.
We'll finish with Metta, as we always do. We're going to start the next Truth of Happiness 12-week course is going to begin January 2nd on Tuesdays and on Saturdays, but not on Thursdays. I'm going to use Thursdays to introduce some suttas that I wanted to talk about for a while. I got a kind of a backlog of those too. So. But all that will be online. So let's find our relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath, the arising and the passing away of your breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. Peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class, and thank you folks for joining online. Peace.
Thank you,
John. Hey, guys.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.